It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo coming to you live from the Build Ford Tough studio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
I will say one thing about Aaron Rodgers. His arm is fine. He still has it. That touchdown pass to Garrett Wilson was a seed as he's rolling to his left and he's throwing against the grain and he puts it right on the money to Garrett Wilson, who leaves his feet for some reason. The guys in the booth were talking about that too, but had the ability to keep both feet in, so that was a great job. It was a great throw. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that he's capable of. And, of course, that Hail Mary throw at the end of the first half is something to behold. I mean, not very many people can do it like that. And this is the fourth time he's done that in his career. But Josh Allen, impossible to play against when he plays like he played last night. Didn't turn the ball over. There was only one turnover. It was that last interception. I looked at that play 10 different ways. And I'm assuming that he was thinking Mike Williams was going to sit down or find the void or stop somewhere in there. That's what it looked like to me. It looked to me like Mike Williams, for some reason, got pushed inside and then was trying to get back outside to the sideline. That's what it looked like.
Well, what it sounded like is Aaron Rodgers tossed him right under the bus after the game.
Well, I know. It did. There's no question about it. But his arm is fine. His ability to get balls into places that very few players could ever do is still there. All of that stuff is still there. Maybe his movement isn't what it used to be, and I think you're right. He may not make it through this season if he keeps taking some of the hits that he took last night.
And I'm not saying he's going to get knocked out for the rest of the year. I'm just saying he's on a track. I mean, through six games, he's getting killed. He is on a track to at least miss a couple of games, whether it's a shoulder or he bangs his thumb on somebody's helmet or, you know, is he gets an MCL sprain or something. He's getting rocked every game. And, like, I watched a lot of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay as a Vikings fan, a lot of those games. I don't remember him getting hit this much this early in a season. Like, it's just this.
Well,
is
he
crazy.
Was younger and he would move out of the way. You know, he took some injuries back when he was
no,
with Green
I know
Bay.
He did.
But I will say this, you know, you had basically two touchdowns that were essentially called back, one for holding. Braylon Allen scores. They give him the ball down by the goal line. He scores. That's called back.
Yeah.
And then you have another one that Garrett Wilson gets hit in the chest with. Now, it's a hard catch. And he gets hit, you know, by the safeties back there in the end zone. But if he holds on to that, this game is completely different.
Yeah.
And those are the things I'm just telling you. Look,
it's just so hard to hear because every week in the NFL, everything's different. If this happens, everything different. Bottom line is you're 2-4 and you fired your coach already. There is obviously all the pressure is on you and you're on the verge of the season slipping away. So,
and
yeah,
you want to know something.
There's no silver lining in them playing close games. There just isn't.
Hey, look, I understand from a fan standpoint and a talk show standpoint, it's, you know, we can bitch and complain all we want about a lot of different things. I'm just telling you, from the players in the locker room to the head coach who does not have an easy job right now, he has got to somehow convince these players, look, guys, we are close. We're right there. And you're right. If they can beat the Steelers and then they play the Patriots and get back to 4-4, now all of a sudden it's a completely different set of circumstances. And they are still right in the mix for everything that they want to accomplish. The season is not over by any stretch of the imagination. There are 11 games to go, for God's sake.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the season is over. I just think that the fact that they're losing these close games and finding ways to lose and having terrible second halves, I mean, it's just, how do you want to look at it? You know, I mean, this is just a classic glass half full, glass half empty situation, and I'm choosing to look at it like they still look really discombobulated. Aaron Rodgers is getting hit a lot. There's too many penalties. They suck in the second half. It feels like the same team after the coaching change. That's where I'm looking at it.
But also,
I can say that, you know, with the schedule and the Steelers are not that good and the Patriots, they should be able to beat the Patriots again and then get the 4-4. I mean, you're saying like you like the fact that they're close against these teams. You know, so we'll see. Just get to really, none of this is going to matter if he's healthy and you get to 4-4 and then you host the Texans on another primetime game and you go from there.
And by the way, did they run the ball more effectively yesterday?
They did. Yeah, it was Breece Hall's best game. Yeah.
Right. All right. So that's the Todd Downing effect. That's calling more running plays, not just relying on the arm, but you know, there were some drop passes in this game last night. There were some goofy plays that didn't seem to develop correctly and there were way too many penalties on both sides of the ball. But he could still fling the ball, fire the ball with the best of them in this league. And I'm just not ready to give up on the team.
No.
Not even close.
I don't want it to seem like I'm giving up on them and the season is over. I don't believe that. I feel like there's bigger problems than you have. I'm projecting more negativity going forward than you are, but there's no way the season is over, especially in this division. I mean, the Bills are up and down like crazy. They had them on the ropes last night and weren't able to finish them off. And you got two other teams that are a mess. So, and no way is the season over. It's just that they got a lot to fix.
By the way, you know, the other thing, when you think about all of this and you compare it to like what the Giants are dealing with, I mean, it is so frustrating watching offenses that just cannot get on track in the second half.
Yeah.
Because that's where the game ultimately, I always say this about Patrick Mahomes. Okay, the numbers may not be startling when it comes to statistics. He's not throwing five touchdown passes every game. They've basically depleted his wide receiver core due to injury or trades or lack of finding a guy like Kadarius Toney that could actually become something. But when the fourth quarter comes, guess who wins the fourth quarter? He does. He wins the fourth quarter, whether it's with his buddy Travis or controlling the game and not taking a sack or running for a first down and extending the play, kind of like Josh Allen did last night.
Yeah, I mean, he was better than the previous couple of weeks last night, that's for sure. But he still had, you still have.
I'll tell you, they looked like they were pissed. Like, they came out of the locker room pissed.
And there still was a chance they were going to lose the game.
Yes.
I mean, it's Rob in Manahawkin. What's going on, Rob?
Good morning, gents. How are you?
Good, man. What's up?
You know, the one thing that I heard all week was the word accountability. I heard Sauce say it, Aaron say it, and then Quinn say it. And then I had to watch Javon Kinlaw, three straight penalties, DJ Reed, three DPIs, and none of these guys are asked to take a seat. Boomer, I'm not an NFL player. If sit on the bench and think about it isn't utilized, what mechanism is being utilized to hold these guys accountable for these horrendous, like, drive-killing, third-down-killing errors?
Yeah, well, the only way you can get to somebody is by not playing them or taking them off the field. But then again, you also could be hurting the team. You know, and it's a balance that the coach has. And Javon last night, you know, especially the penalty after the fact, it really didn't affect the game at all. But, you know, when he's mouthing off to the official, I mean, those are the types of things that are undisciplined. The roughing the passer, I guess you could call it, and, you know, they're told to call anything that they deem close to being roughing the passer. But between the bad holding penalties, the penalties on offense, the formation penalties, those are the things that are self-inflicted.
Yes, and that's what's so frustrating to someone like our last caller who's a Jets fan is, okay, you know, we screamed and yelled about Rob Saleh being a coach who didn't hold anybody accountable and the penalties fell at his feet, and he's not there any longer, and I saw 10 million flags last night. Let's go to Sean in Connecticut. What's going on, Sean?
By the way.
Hey, guys. Boomer.
Yeah.
You had Jim Breach when you played. You would say he was a reliable kicker.
Yeah, and Nick Lowry, by the way, who was also a great kicker, yes.
Yeah, well, what drives me crazy is Greg Zuerlein. I was a kicker, and he cannot resist the habit of picking his head up to watch his kicks before his foot hits the ball. When he's practicing, like off the little tee that they use, or just in the regular warm-up when there's no rush or anything, he can do it just by memory, muscle memory, but in a game, you know, the ball could be a quarter inch off in the placement of the hold. And if you watch, he always picks his head up. He's not watching his foot actually hit the ball. And that's why, you know, 40-yard kick, a quarter inch at the spot, that's several feet downfield. And he's been doing this since the Cowboys, since the Rams. The 48-yarder he missed in Super Bowl 53 at the end of the game was that way. He did it with the Cowboys. And he's done it all the time with the Jets, even on extra points that barely go through. I don't understand why a special teams coach has not said to him, keep your head down through your follow-through, or why he hasn't self-corrected. If I did this, the defensive players in a close game, I blew a game, they'd be slamming me into my locker, or the offensive players, because he's costing them the game because he can't keep his head down. It's ridiculous. He has all the talent in the world. He can kick the ball to the moon, but he does not watch his foot hit the ball.
All right, little kicker mechanic spot here.
I'm sure that they're talking to him about it, and I'm sure that he's trying to self-correct. I mean, he's been around a long time. He's had a lot of success. And he's Greg the Leg, man. You remember when he first burst onto the scene with the Rams?
That's right. Yeah, Greg the Leg.
Maybe he's missing missing John Fossil. I
mean, how many millions of dollars this guy made in the NFL kicking?
How about Blair Walsh? Remember the Blair Walsh Project?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Of course I do. Jim in Bayshore. What's going on, Jim?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm so thrilled that in 14 years, we're going to get our quarterback. Jordan Love is our guy. I'm telling you right now, he's a lock. I'm telling you, 14 years from now, I know we're getting our quarterback, okay? So we have to be patient here. As a Jet fan, I've been a Jet fan. I was there, you know, I was fourth grade, 1969, we won the Super Bowl. But I'm feeling it now. Everyone's being so negative, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. We have someone that's going to come in there and make a difference.
Yeah, Jim, I mean, you'll draft six losers in that time, too, that'll last 2 years, the quarterback position,
man,
and you'll discard.
I know it's stump on Jet Day today. I understand that, especially in light of what the Yankees and the Mets did yesterday. But, I mean, my God, it's 11 games to go. They've only played six real games together. There's drop passes. There's penalties. There's breakdowns by the defense. They've lost the last three games by 10 points.
This was a huge game that all of us expected them to win.
Believe it or not, you know, if the offense had some really key penalties that cost them big plays and ended up costing them a missed field goal. But I would say that this game, from a running and offensive play standpoint and a play-action play standpoint, I thought was better. Now, I know that the Hail Mary is a once-in-a-lifetime deal, or four-in-a-lifetime if you're Aaron, but that's a part of the game. And Alan Lazard made a great play on that. And God bless that official who made the right call.
Yeah, I mean, yes, they would have figured it out anyway,
but he made the right call in real time.
He did. RJ in Northport, what's going on, RJ?
Hey, let's go Mets. So far, so good out there. But I just want to call up. I'm feeling a little bit nervous about every time we got Matan out there. I mean, he's kind of giving up runs every single time, and I think he's going to come around and bite us one of these days.
Yeah, so Matan, not Matan, but he does make me nervous as well. He got the job done yesterday. There's no two ways about it. He was happier in the clubhouse than the last time we had heard from him. He was talking about, hey, you know, I'm going to make good pitches on the iPad. He makes me nervous as well. He looks frightened out there. He did have a decent regular season for the team. Carlos Mendoza does trust him, but you know, last night he did his job. He kept things at bay. So I'm not going to get on him this morning. But there's something about like
his demeanor.
His demeanor.
He's very, very relaxed out there.
He looks scared. And then when he's off, he looks like he's throwing meatballs because he doesn't have a ton of movement on his pitches. So he's a little bit frightening to me, just like every other guy in the bullpen for every team. There's very few guys that are 100% in trust.
He doesn't have the cheese. Yeah. He doesn't have his 98-mile-an-hour fastball, so he's got to play games with the guys up there, and he's got to locate his pitches, and he's got to use them right. And, you know, sometimes if you got a guy that's throwing 97, 98 miles an hour, and then you bring him in, that's a completely different set of circumstances. Yeah. That's how he can be successful. But, you know, it wasn't his fault yesterday because of the errors and things of that nature.
No,
you know,
he
got ground balls.
No, he was fine. And I'm not – last night's not – or yesterday's not a time to get on him. You know, as far as guys that you trust in the bullpen, I mean, if you want to say that David Peterson, even he didn't have a great outing in game one, but if you want to call David Peterson a bullpen guy at this point in the postseason, you trust him. I trust Stanek. I love Stanek out of the bullpen. He's been awesome. And, you know, outside of that, I mean, Buto had an issue in the Philly series. You didn't love that, but, in the Brewers series. But, I mean, I mean, Stanek's really like the only guy who comes out of there that I'm like, hey, we're going to be okay.
Diaz takes us to the cliff.
Yeah,
but,
I mean,
you know, when he's throwing heat at 98 miles an hour and that ball's moving and they can't catch up to it. Mm-hmm. It's when he throws the meatballs down the middle around 96.
Meatballs.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know.
But hey, listen, you know, this is pretty much the case with every team. But I will say the Dodgers, like they were talking about yesterday on the broadcast, if they don't have to use their high leverage guys, you know, they're going to come into play here over these next three games. There's no question.
Yeah, and I didn't. So Dave Roberts down 6-0 gets interviewed on the field by Rosenthal. You know, and he goes, you know, we just want to get this game a little bit closer so we see the Mets high leverage guys. We get a look at them.
And that's exactly what they did. So, like, that, they at least accomplished that. But screw it. Whatever. You got the win, and you get a day off. You get these guys traveling, rest, and hopefully everybody's available tomorrow night. And you got three games at City, man. Let's go. You did exactly what you needed to do out there, and it was probably the most stressful four-run win ever. but it was a win. All right, Boomer and Geo.
They're all stressful now, man.
Yeah, I know, of course. Boomer and Geo, game one wasn't, though. Game one was over and done with, and like, okay, let's just get to game two.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Jam-packed Sunday night and Monday night. We got the Yankees by themselves tonight before things start ratcheting up again with the Mets at Citi Field. Jerry's here to tell you about everything that's going on. What's up, Jerry?
We are brought to you by Hard Rock Bet. Download the Hard Rock Bet app and roll with us. And by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. We've been kind of going backwards through the night, through the morning, starting with the football. This morning, we'll start the way it started yesterday at 4 o'clock with the Mets and the Dodgers. Mets had a 6-0 lead. The Dodgers trying to battle back, and a huge, I would call it a huge insurance run by the Mets. He's late.
Alonso at second. Here's the pitch. Swinging a ground ball up the middle, base hit going into center field. Alonso rounds third. He's coming home. Throw to the plate by Páez. Head first slide. He's safe. Down to second goes Marte. Single and a run batted in. The Mets have a 7-3 lead.
And that was Howie Rose on Mets Odyssey Radio.
Deep throat.
A 7-3 lead at that point. A 7-3 final would be the score as Edwin Diaz would lock it down in the ninth inning. Here was Carlos Mendoza. Yes, they got the grand slam from Vientos. Yes, you got the home run from Lindor, but you also got the RBI double from Tyrone Taylor. And, of course, Marte coming through late. He says, we're not a one-trick pony offense.
There's a lot of different ways we could create and we can attack, whether it's not only by hitting the ball out of the ballpark, but taking our walks, putting the ball in play, going the other way when we need to just make things happen. Is what makes this lineup a deep lineup.
And speaking of making things happen, Francisco Lindor led off the game with a home run, making things happen.
I was just trying to have a quality at bat and get the guys going, you know, do get something going for the guys where it was getting first, second, third, and if the ball went out, it went out. I was not trying to hit a home run. Just trying to stay within myself, and I'm trying to win, you know. So at the end of the day, this is not about me. It's about doing whatever it takes to win.
And they're winning, and winning a lot, as a matter of fact, even up the series at 1-1. Perhaps one of the biggest outs in the game was Edwin Diaz being called upon in the eighth with two on and two out, tying run at the plate. It was a 6-3 game at the time. Here was Diaz getting Kike Hernandez to fly out.
I just was following Albie, like I always said. I was feeling good with my slider today. I went more really good in the bullpen. And I just follow him, make good pitches, get the out in the eighth.
Yes, they did. Took it to the ninth. He did give up a hit and a walk, but then he struck out the next three batters, including Mookie Betts. And the Mets come away with the 7-3 win. So, series shifts to Citi Field for games 3, 4, and 5. Game 3 tomorrow. Sean Manaea, who got the win yesterday. What will the atmosphere be like?
It's going to be crazy. I mean, last time we were there playing the Phillies, it was wild. So, you know, I expect nothing less. And just very excited to be back home.
No, it's going to be crazy. And the one thing we haven't talked about this morning is this plantar fasciitis.
With Nimmo?
Nimmo. It obviously is affecting him. He's playing through it, much like Freddie Freeman's playing through the bad ankle. Mm-hmm. I mean, and there's really nothing you can do. And I know John Smoltz was talking about and rolling your foot on a lacrosse ball, like all that stuff, it's not going to do anything in the immediate moment right now when you have to go out on the field and play. He could do some modalities. He could put some ice down there. He could put some stim before a game. He may take a shot or two to try to numb it. But that's basically that's what you're dealing with. And, you know, he will not be able to, there's not going to be any surgery done to this. They'll put him in a boot when the season's over, and he'll be in that boot for 6 weeks minimum. You know, I'll tell you, it is a pain in the ass to play. It's one of the reasons why I retired. You know that. Mm-hmm. I had it in both feet, and it was just it's so debilitating. And it looks to me like watching him that it is really significant.
And he made a great play on that fly ball to deep left.
And you could see him immediately after he made that catch, and he was limping, and yep, he was ginger, and it's just, yeah. I mean, he's in pain.
I wonder if that's going to make them think about putting him out there. You know, you could see that it is obvious, and it's obvious when he's on the base path. It's obvious when he's in the batter's box. I mean, that thing's going to bother him for minimum 3 months.
So they're tied at 1-1. The Yankees took game one from the Guardians 5-2. An early home run from Juan Soto, and Giancarlo Stanton finishes it off.
Now the 0-1 is hit in the air to left center. It is high. It is far. It is gone. A Stantonian home run. Giancarlo.
And that was
Sit on my face.
Yes.
I have to say, you know, it's actually turned out pretty good that he and Susan are back together for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John's not a jinx.
No, he's not. Not at all. Not yet.
He's not going to be. They'll win this series. They win 5-2 last night. Here was Stanton. October, just different, and he certainly has excelled again.
I understand how important each pitch, each moment is. I understand that you're not always going to be successful in those moments, but anything I can do, any bit of information or video or swings, anything I can do to be in my best spot during this moment.
Aaron Judge did have a sack fly and an RBI in the fourth inning of this game. He also struck out on two pitches that were not strikes, by the way, early on. Here was Juan Soto. Judge will be just fine. We are winning, even if he is struggling a little bit.
I don't think he has any pressure. We definitely, like I say, it's a team effort. At the end of the day, it's going to take every single guy in that lineup. We cannot lean on only him, so we all got to come through in one time.
And right now they are. And remember we played, I think it was yesterday morning, we played Carlos Rodon talking about as he was gearing up and getting ready for this game, he was taking lessons from Garrett Cole and the way he handled himself.
Yeah, emotion, yeah.
Yeah, so that was exactly what he was talking about post-game after he went six innings of three-hit ball with nine strikeouts.
I watched Garrett throw that game four in Kansas City, and, you know, mentally I was taking notes on how he was going out there and going about it, and I just wanted to kind of go about it the same way, and I thought I did well at that tonight.
So there you go. He put it into effect, and it worked. You get Garrett Cole tonight against Tanner Bibee. We will have it on the fan. First pitch at 7:38 as the Yankees look to take a 2-0 lead into Cleveland for a Game 3. All right, we get to the Jets. We've heard the game-sealing interception. We heard Bob Wischusen's call. Here's how it sounded nationally. Kevin Harlan, Westwood One.
It's a four-man rush. Rodgers drifting back after the snap. Cocks his arm, long spiral pass. Far side, he's got a receiver, but the receiver slipped. But he may have caught the ball, Mike Williams. Or was it picked off in the play by Johnson? It was!
Yeah, it was, and that was your ball game. 23-20, the Bills beat the Jets.
Great point. So I just looked at this interview that Aaron gave after the game. I mean, he essentially is just lighting into Mike Williams. He obviously, they either don't like him or he doesn't like him. I don't think it's a personal thing. I just think it's a frustration thing. I think it is scathing when you see Aaron Rodgers giving the explanation of what happened on that play.
You mean the clip I played last hour?
Yes, yeah. And but you got to see his face when he's talking about it. I mean, he's livid, and he must not have a lot of confidence in Mike. And I know Mike's coming off of a knee injury, and maybe that has something to do with whatever's going on. I'm not really sure, but boy, I'll tell you what, I've never seen anything.
Sore knees making him run a wrong route?
Hey, honestly, I've never seen anything like that. I can't remember the last time I saw a quarterback stand up there and basically say, that guy did the wrong thing.
Hmm.
Essentially is what
yeah.
he's saying.
I mean, I'm sure there's examples, but not recently, yeah. I mean, I couldn't give you one.
Wow. I mean, that.
Here, I'll play it for you again. This is the interception.
Two verticals, you know. Allen's down the seam, Mike's down the red line. So I'm looking at Allen. He puts his hand up. Three guys go with him. So I'm throwing a no look to the red line. And when I just peek my eyes back there, he's running a handbreaker. So it's got to be down the red line.
So were you throwing that to come back to it?
No, I was throwing it to the red line. But when I got to about here, I realized he was running a handbreaker. So I had to kind of adjust it a little bit. But the play is two guys vertical, one guy down the seam, one guy on the red line.
It's
pretty obvious what he's saying.
And, man, wow.
Yeah. Here's more Rodgers. 11 more penalties for this team. His thoughts? Who knows? Maybe a fine is coming his way.
Yeah, it seemed a little ridiculous. Yeah, some of them seemed really bad, including the roughing the passer on me. That's not roughing the passer. Might as well play sarcastic ball if we're going to call those things. And I thought the one on Kinlaw was not roughing the passer either.
I knew you got that reference. I didn't.
I mean, I didn't get the reference, but I heard C-Mac look it up this morning when he heard the audio. And apparently it's from a South Park episode from like 12 or 13 years ago where...
A sport where safety is all that matters? How about we call it sarcastic ball?
There it is.
Yeah.
And here is C-Mac.
The same crap cloud surrounds the Jets.
A crap cloud. Yeah.
Hey, Aaron, what happened in the red zone? You guys didn't do so good.
Nothing. We had chances. We had a walk-in touchdown with Braylon. And we had a phantom holding call. Had a chance with G twice. So we had our chances.
And that holding was on Tyron Smith, which was... I guess you could have gone. They did call it, but...
And he did not have a good game.
No, he has struggled.
Yes, he has.
And Morgan Moses had a bad penalty in this game, too. Bill Belichick on the Manning cast, standing up for one Rob Saleh, who is now unemployed.
You know, Peyton, Eli, I'm not a big Jets fan, in case you don't know that. You know, like Fireman Ed, but that's it. But you know what? Coach Saleh did a good job with that program. I mean, he brought in a culture, a level of toughness and competitiveness. You know, unfortunately, the offense... You know, hasn't been what, you know, a lot of quarterbacks last year and a little bit of a slow start. But I thought Coach Slaw really did a good job with this team.
So then there was a play and then they come back to it.
Seemed quite early to me to be making a head coaching change.
Yeah. kind of what it's been there at the Jets. You know, barely won over 30% in the last 10 years. So, you know, the owner being the owner, just ready, fire, aim.
I mean,
wow, he hates the Jets.
Yeah, he hates Woody.
To the Jets.
I mean, I was saying that when you were suggesting that a few months ago, I was like, there's no way in hell he hates it. I kept referencing that Two Bills documentary when the producer's like, hey, can we go in the Jets locker room? And Bill's like, well, I don't have to go in there. What a part of hell.
Man.
I mean, he hates him. He hates Woody Johnson, and he just wrecked him.
I did see this, a source telling the Daily Mail that London.
Yes. Yeah.
That Bill Belichick is so happy in his relationship with 23-year-old Jordan Hudson, now I'm quoting from the article, that it is blossoming into something that is going to lead to marriage. Adding, he wants to be with her all the time, but she is pushing him to see the coaching options that he will have next season because she knows that what makes him happy.
Get him out of the house, too.
Well, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, and then I'm going to play one from...
like, things are going great. Let's get married and ruin it.
Okay. Let's see. I want to play one from Robert Kraft. He was on the Breakfast Club podcast. Maybe we've heard this before. I don't know. He's talking about the day Brady left him to go to Tampa, and he was done in New England.
It was one of the worst days of my... It's like...
Almost like losing a son.
Losing a child. He cried that whole time when he had to leave us. And it, you know, I understood it. He lived under an arrangement that was very difficult for him the last decade.
What does that mean?
He lived
under an arrangement? And he said,
Belichick?
For 10 years, he had an arrangement with Belichick? Or he's talking about his marriage? I don't know what he's talking about. I thought that one was a weird one. The fact that he was crying the whole time.
Everybody's emotional, Jerry. You know that.
Everybody's very emotional. Then there's Nick Sirianni. He said, hey, my bad for this interaction with the fan.
I was trying to bring energy yesterday, enthusiasm yesterday. And I'm sorry and disappointed on how my energy was directed at the end of the game. And, you know, my energy should be all in on coaching, motivating, right, and celebrating with our guys.
Right, adding, got to be a little more mature.
And I got to have better wisdom and discernment of when to use that energy. And that wasn't the time.
A lot of energy. So on the McAfee show, which I found funny, they read a tweet from an Eagles fan, as McAfee points out, this is after an actual win. This wasn't after an Eagles loss.
Hashtag, I don't want to overreact, but having Nick Sirianni as a coach every week feels like a continuous loop of the Super Bowl loss. The only thing we gained in this bye week was kid haircut. Fire this guy and feed him to the heroin addicts in Kensington.
They won the game.
Oh, my God. Jesus. Yeah, they beat the Browns.
Yet they hate him there.
Yeah. Feed him to the heroin addicts in Kensington. Does that mean Spike's getting a piece of that?
Oh, man. I like the bleep head haircut that he now has, too. So that's your football story. NHL-wise, the Rangers did beat the Red Wings 4-1. Wins for the Islanders and Devils as well. Jersey at Carolina tonight.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Hi, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So much going on. We'll get right back to it, but I do have to just share this from X yesterday. I mean, the X for you tab and the algorithm that it's got me on is just like the most crazy, out of this world stuff. So on Instagram, my algorithm, it's basically golf, boats, and boobs. Like, that's all that it feeds me on Instagram.
Feed me, Seymour.
Right. That's what I get there. On TikTok, where I don't post anything, but I'll look at stuff, it gives me, like, funny animal videos, right? Golf tips. And just, boobs. No boobs there, really. It gives you, like, conspiracy stuff, like, for whatever reason. Like, oh, UFO things. Like, that's what I got on there. With X, it is, like, it can be anything. I mean, I'm talking anything. It could be a dead person. It could be, like, AI pictures of stuff that I'm not sure. Like, it could be innocent stuff, like a Dua Lipa singing somewhere, or like a dog. But yesterday, this this picture's going around that's on my For You tab that cannot be real. But I kept staring at it, and I'm sure that one of you came across it yesterday. It's like a black and white photo of like six people, and they're all naked. And it's Jennifer Lopez's head, Diddy's head, and Jay-Z's head on these bodies, and then two blurred out women there. And like, like several people are like, this is why Ben Affleck divorced J-Lo. And I can't stop looking at it because the picture looks so real. And it's got like a little, like, you know, Jay-Z's like a little chunky, you know? Yes. It's like this naked Jay-Z who's like a little chunky, and they all look like they're about to go into this door. J-Lo's sitting there and her boobs are out, and then Diddy's like in front of him like this. So I'm like, there's no way. It's like, you know, the other captures would be like, bro, who got the video? I can't stop staring at it. And I'm like, this is not good. Like, as much as it's making me laugh, I'm like, this is not good. This is why people believe everything. Now, maybe, like, by some 10% chance that the picture is real, that blows up the entire internet for the next 50 years. But
by the way, it did not come across my
It didn't?
It did not, no.
Did you get it, Al?
I didn't get it either. I'm looking at it now.
What do you think?
I mean, it does look real.
I know, but it can't be. It can't be. I think Juju Smith-Schuster actually, he did. Juju Smith-Schuster actually tweeted this out yesterday.
Yeah. Why is he tweeting it out? Is it this?
No. You will not find it on Google.
Oh, you won't? Okay.
Here you go. There you go.
Oh, man.
There's no way. I mean, and things can look so real these days with Photoshop and AI and everything. There's just no way. There's no way that you just got this naked J-Lo and Jay-Z and then Diddy and they're just like, ah, come on.
Oh, man.
What do you think?
I don't know. I have no idea.
You see it, Eddie?
I did.
Thoughts?
Looks real, but...
Yeah, it can't be.
You never know, man.
It just can't be.
How old would you say that Jennifer Lopez is in that picture?
Well, she's always looked way younger than she's been. So that has to be when the two of them were together, if this were real. But I just doubt that it is.
25?
No. No. They have to be older than that, I would think. Going back to when she was with Diddy, I don't remember. I mean, she's like 55 now, I think.
To me, that looked like an older Photoshop, you know, a post 45 Photoshop of her.
Oh, I mean, if there's some video out there of a naked Jay-Z and a naked J-Lo just like walking around the house with Diddy, come on.
So it obviously looks like it's from a security camera.
You know how much TMZ would pay for that video?
Yeah, I was just saying, but it looks like it's from a security camera.
Right, but it can't be. It just can't be real. It can't be. But I just gotta get away from it. Give me like the puppy videos. Give me the boats, the boobs, and the golf. Give me that.
You know we have Telemundo on? That would have made Telemundo if there was any credence to it, I think.
Yeah, it would have, of course, it would have made all sorts of news.
But you just don't know now. It could be real.
I know. Like, there is a chance. I'm not saying I think it's a small chance, but I think there's a chance. The Jay-Z thing gets me, because like if somebody really did make that up and Photoshop that thing, they chose like a guy who's just like a little bit overweight. It's like perfect for Jay-Z. Oh, my God.